At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Anything to lose. I have no secrets to hide. I could just be blunt and people could judge it however they judge it.
From NBI Studios, this is Truth and Justice, a crowdsourced investigation in real time. I'm Bob Ruff. Everybody, and welcome back to Truth and Justice. I am joined today by someone that I met a couple years ago back when we were doing the True Crime Binge series. Ryan was actually, I don't know if you realize this, Ryan, you were actually the very last episode of True Crime Binge.
I remember that. Yeah, it was, When I heard that, I was like, oh, that's quite sad, but I felt a bit special.
Yeah, it's special or you ruined the podcast. Something happened.
I think the decision was made prior to my interview.
Right. So putting a lot of thought into what we're going to be doing between seasons, as you guys know, we're still working on wrapping up season 15 and continuing on with Jody's case right now. We've got some balls in the air that we're waiting to land to see where we end up with that. And then once we're done with that, and in the meantime, before we get to our next season, what I want to do is I want to bring on other podcasters in the true crime space that are doing work, that are doing real good work in the space. Not that there's anything wrong with anybody that's doing storytelling or anything like that, but I just want to, try to use this platform and our amazing audience to, help promote the work others are doing and hopefully get more eyes and ears on their work. And Ryan absolutely fits that category. I've been thinking about your work since I talked to you a couple of years ago on True Crime Binge. Ryan Wolf hosts the podcast Guilt down in New Zealand. So this arranging this time was super interesting for us.
Yeah, exactly. I'm coming from the future a day ahead of you.
Yeah, I had to think about it as in terms of how many hours behind me he is. But right now it's 5 o'clock on Monday here and it's 11 a.m., right?
It's 11 o'clock. Yep.
Yep. Tuesday in New Zealand. But Ryan hosts the podcast Guilt. And I think was it your season one case we talked about last time?
Yeah, I think we may have covered season one and maybe season two as well. I think maybe we were somewhere into season two. But yeah, it's been a while. So one and two. And then since then, there's been three and four.
And then now you're kind of circling back to season three, right? A second part of season three.
Yeah. So season three focuses on two Swedish tourists that were murdered in New Zealand back in 1989. And it's been a huge case in New Zealand. And a man was convicted of it there was no bodies, which was a first down these ways. And yeah, I focused on that case and a lot happened. And sort of 12 months ago, there were developments that it sort of got to a point where I was like, all right, I have to put the podcast side of it on hold while I sort of work on the investigative side of it when we're getting to the real pointy end of it. So I worked on season four while in the background I was working with the police on season three. And then now I've circled back to sort of tell that story of what's happened over the last 12 months while that season's been on hiatus. So yeah, that's where we're at the moment.
And that's one thing that I find really cool about your podcast. And I don't know if it's a New Zealand thing or you just a little background on Ryan. Ryan is both a lawyer and an actor and does podcasts. Seems like in New Zealand, you guys just juggle around your careers, whatever.
Yeah, well, there's not that many of us, so we need a multitask.
Right. But I always thought it was neat when we talked years ago that the police seemed very open to working with you. Of course, I do wrongful convictions, so they're generally mad at me. But a lot of times in the States, people just don't want to really connect with and work with anybody in the media, particularly podcasters. They see us as armchair detectives that don't really know what we're doing. But you've made connections with law enforcement and have helped them with their cases.
Yeah. And I mean, it certainly started off the way that you're describing at the beginning. Who's this guy and why do they want to sort of work with me? But I think as the snowball of my podcast grew and grew, it got to the point where eventually they sort of can't just ignore me because, the potential public pressure could be too big and they don't want to to have missed something if they didn't, you know, at least listen.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I think certainly in season four, I actually went to Australia and I spent a lot of time working over there. And the Australian police are actually really good too. Hey, I'm not going to say it's always smooth sailing, particularly with the New Zealand police. But, you know, it's at the point where, you know, I call someone on a daily basis, a detective that I'll work with. And, you know, there's a lot of trust that goes between both of us. You know, I've sat on an important part of the story for the best part of 12 months just so that we could make sure that the right processes were followed in order to get justice or human remains, which is what we're looking at in this case.
And I admire that so much. And it's something that I guess, from the other side of the world, like so much relate with you because that happens to me constantly in this case. Usually with me, it's maybe with attorneys, not so much with law enforcement. But yeah, you're trying to put out content and tell the story and engage an audience. And then you find the thing that is like, this would be the best podcast episode ever. But it's like, but you have the moral compass to say, but I can't share that because it's going to affect, you know, our number one priority is always to like make sure justice is served somewhere. And so we have to hold some of that stuff back. And you've always been great at doing that.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I say this all the time and I think people like you'll know as well, Bob, that 90% of what happens never makes the podcast, you know, because right. It can't because of privacy reasons or to make sure that the investigation comes first. And I always, you know, when I first started my podcast, it was never about this big successful podcast. I just wanted to solve a case. So the investigation always came first. And the podcast was just, okay, how do I tell the story of what's happened? You know, and then obviously these things evolve and now, you know, the podcast is able to sort of fund the investigations on a much bigger level and that's great. So, but yeah, you're constantly faced with this dilemma of how the hell do I tell this story, you know? And as you'll know, the amount of times I've thought, Jesus, this would be the craziest podcast ever if I could say what's actually going on right now. But, you know, you can't for most of it. You know, I always think maybe one day in 20 years, I'll be able to write a book when it doesn't matter so much anymore. But yeah, it's the constant dilemma. But for me, yeah, investigation first. And I've got a goal in season three in particular, which is to find this girl's remains and, you know, like very close. So that's why I went quiet on it for 12 months.
Now that one, let's talk about season three for a little bit. Now that one, Heidi's body has never been found.
Yeah.
Her partner's body was found. Is that right?
Yeah. So the basic, it's a complicated case, but so yeah, I mean, they go missing. They were here for a holiday, 2 or 3 months traveling around, you know, backpacking. They had bought a small car and they'd been here for 2 months. They were due to leave in a week and suddenly they just disappeared and no one knew where they were. Then things started to point in the direction of the New Zealand sort of bush. You know, we have a lot of hiking tracks in the bush. The thing in New Zealand, it's our bush is different to the bush that you might be used to. It's extremely thick and unforgiving. You know, you can't take more than a couple steps, you know, you're with bush and brambles and so on. But a huge search ensued. They never found anything, basically barely a shred of any evidence. But they did find this one guy, David Tamahiri, and the police decided that sort of he's our man. He's the guy that did this because he showed up with their car and said that he had found this car on the side of the road. So he basically broke into it and stole it. But the police didn't believe that. They said, no, that's a likely story, you know? And then so they built a case around him being the murderer. And he's pled his innocence all these years. And you can look both sides. There's a lot of people that thought he was innocent and people that thought he wasn't.
And what year did this all happen?
1989. It was April 1989. They disappeared. And then Tamahiri was convicted in 1990, but no bodies were found at that point and basically no evidence either. It was a completely circumstantial case. He always pled his innocence, many appeals that he's failed. But in 1991, the key thing happened, which was Urban's body, the boy's body, he was 23, it was found. But the thing is, it was found in a place that didn't fit the theory the police had used to convict David Tamahiri. They had said, the whole thing took place in the bush in this place called Crosby's Clearing and on a hiking track on the other side of the island. And then Urban's body shows up in a completely separate location. And they had built this evidence saying that David Tamahiri had stolen the watch off of Urban and given it to his son. And then, of course, when they found the remains, the watch was right there on the remains you know, the opposite to what the police said. And naturally, his team said, well, there you go. Our guy didn't do it. I mean, none of this fits. But the New Zealand courts didn't agree, and so they didn't uphold his appeal, and he ended up serving 21 years. But then, so I came along a couple of years ago and decided to have another look at the case. And effectively, there's always been a belief that if Tamahiri did do this, then he wasn't the only one, that there was probably there was probably someone else. And that's what my investigation effectively uncovered. And it turns out there were a lot of people that knew sort of the truth about this thing and had kept quiet. So yeah, that's been the base of the podcast. And then that's kind of led to me sort of focusing in on an area that for human remains, where I know some human remains are that I believe could be Heidi.
So is the conclusion that you came to that this guy, David, was actually involved, but then along with someone else?
Yeah. So my conclusion was effectively, like when I went into it, I said, okay, I'm going to be completely impartial. All I was looking for was, are there any clues in this case as to where Heidi's remains might be? I wasn't going into it looking to try and find whether he was innocent or guilty. I wasn't too worried about that. I just thought maybe the police have missed something. And over time, I sort of flip-flopped on whether he was innocent or guilty. And then it did come to a point where I realized there was a witness that came forward that basically put him in there too. And I thought, right, okay, well, he is involved. But then there's also this other man that was involved with him, the two of them. And so I believe he is involved. It's my opinion. He still says he's innocent, but, you know, the witness evidence doesn't fit that, and neither does the circumstantial evidence as well.
And he's out of prison, right? He did his 21 years and he's out now.
He got out in 2010. In New Zealand, life isn't really life. You know, you kill two people and you get out relatively quickly. But yeah, he served his time, but he always maintained his innocence, and he said he never knew where Heidi's remains are. And he's always stuck to that. But the evidence just doesn't really fit. You know, it just doesn't fit what he's trying to say. And it's become more and more obvious the further it's gone on.
Have you, was the information about the body, the remains that you found, was that the information that you had to hold back for all those that year?
Yeah. So that's when it got to that point where I found someone that, you know, I have to be a little bit careful what I say even now, but you know, that there were human remains found quite some years ago, and that this person could basically point me in the direction of where they are. And then we'd just have to go get them. And then so once it got to that point, then obviously that's where I had to sort of stop the podcast and work with police from there. And that's what I've done. But that work is still ongoing. It's been sometimes with the police, you do feel like you're banging your head against a brick wall. But things
are. Same is true in my experience with lawyers. But that's the thing is when you got people like us that are like, this is, you know, once we're locked into a case, this is our case, and we're working on it 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Yeah.
And we find something. And then for me, it's always going to the lawyer, like, okay, here's this thing, go get it. And they're like, okay. And it's on a list somewhere.
Yeah.
And just bang it. Like, I know. When are you going to do this? Yeah, let's go.
I know. And that's the thing. Like, obviously, we work on a case full time until we're done with that case. But detectives, they're working on a bunch of different cases. And especially a historical one like this is not getting, you know, it's not getting a lot of eyes on 35 years later. And the evidence that I'm presenting to them doesn't fit the existing theory. So it doesn't behoove them for this to be correct in some ways, because it would sort of mean that their whole case was bullshit, more or less.
Right.
So that's where it becomes a conflict of interest for them in a way. But yeah, I think we are getting somewhere with this. We definitely are. And I'm hoping that there's going to be something positive that's going to come out very soon.
What is that dynamic looking like? Like you said, you have a detective you talk to all the time.
Yeah.
And you're presenting them with this evidence that will, on one hand, help them completely solve the case, but on the other hand, means they're admitted that they screwed up. And you don't look at it this way, people, but I could see them looking at it as though they got outwitted by a podcaster.
Yeah. The way you present things, one thing you should never do, in my opinion, is my experience, is go out and try and prove the police wrong and tell them, oh, you should have done this and you should have done that, because that will get you nowhere real fast. Mm-hmm. So you sort of try and work within their box of, okay, well, this is what their thing is. How can I get my bit of evidence in there in a way that they're going to understand and take it on board? Because, you know, like it's some people, their approach is to just yell and scream at the police, but you know, I mean, naturally that doesn't often work, but a bit of extra media pressure that can help. But yeah, the dynamic is sometimes I feel like, yeah, that they're ignoring completely. They'll take the bit out that they like and then just ignore everything else that doesn't fit what they want. But I don't know. I don't worry about it too much. Just as long as they're listening and we are sort of progressing.
You feel pretty confident that they're progressing forward with the information you've...
Yeah. And we have, yeah, again, I'm trying to like not say everything because there may be some listeners on there that are from New Zealand. But, you know, we have advanced, important things have happened in the last 12 months to do with the police and the case, and it's all been kept quiet. Very soon, it'll be a huge story, but just not quite yet.
When did you launch part two of season three? So I just, right before I came in here, I was just listening to your last episode before you kind of went on your hiatus.
Yeah.
And there was all the information about the car that came out and stuff. It's just fascinating stuff. And I don't know if you want to give too much of that away, but that was a pretty interesting find, I thought, how you kind of concluded season three.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, hey, at the end of the day, I'm happy to talk about anything that happened in the podcast episodes in the past. But yeah, I mean, the fact that there ended up being two vehicles that were the same. The Swedes were driving a 1979 Subaru station wagon. It was a white one. And it turned out that where the boy's body was discovered, it ended up being at the back of this farm of this other suspect. And it just so happened that the father of that farm, well, they owned a car that was virtually identical to the one the Swedes drove. And it could present, I believe, let's call it motive in a way, as to why the Swedes ended up there. Perhaps they were trying to sell their car at the time. And I'm rambling a bit there. But yeah, the car thing's very interesting, but it's also one of these things that I was never able to get conclusive evidence. But there is the belief that the cars were actually switched at some point, and that the car that the police actually recovered, believing it to be the Swedes, was actually not. And it was actually the other car that was owned by this family, one of whom is one of the key suspects now. But some of these things are difficult to prove, you know, 35 years later.
Yeah, and how crazy would that be if they still seemingly got the right guy with completely false, wrong information and the incorrect evidence.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that's another thing too, is that John Hughes was the head detective in this case. He was a hotshot detective back in the day. He'd sort of never lost a case kind of thing. He ended up being involved in a famous case in New Zealand called the Arthur Allen Thomas case, which was a wrongful conviction case eventually, where he was involved in the planting of a bullet in the crime scene, which led to the conviction of Arthur Allen Thomas. And eventually that conviction was quashed when this was discovered some 20 years later or 18 years later or something. And so this is the same detective that was involved in the Swedish case. And there's speculation that there may have been the planting of evidence in this case too. Although I don't have evidence to prove it, there were some very odd things that happened. There was a tent that showed up. You know, the police had a crime scene, right? And they went through this crime scene, which included a couple small sheds with, let's say, a fine-tooth comb, you know, and I've seen the reports, and it's got in the grass, found bottle cap, beer, you know, found toothpick, you know, this is through the grass. And in this area, there was these two small sheds. Now, they were looking for camping gear from the Swedes. That's what the searchers were told to look for. They forensically searched the sheds twice and find nothing. It's just full of just random stuff. Then 9 months later, a member of the public walks into the shed. Oh, and lo and behold, right there, lying in the shed, is the Swede's tent. There it is. I mean, it's a Swedish tent, and it just shows up there. And no one could explain. The police were like, oh, I don't know how that got there. But, well, this happens to fit our case perfectly. We told you that they went in this direction. Because it's – and then Heidi's jacket also showed up in the same area, in an area that had been searched already, and I've spoken to the searchers involved in the search. I've been back to the location, and the guy said, mate, we searched this area, and the same thing happened. A random member of the public happens to walk past, although both these people weren't random, they were connected to the police, and happens to find Heidi's jacket neatly folded just off the side of the path. Also very helpful to the police case at that point. And, you know, I can't say they were planted, but it's very odd. Let's just say that.
It seems like you guys have, I think sometimes we think that these are only American problems, for shit like this. And you know, it's crazy too, because like you said, it seems like they probably got at least one of the right guys when it's all said and done. But they cut corners to do it. We had a similar situation in our current case. It's a murder case, but there is like this robbery that's connected to it. And it was very obvious from the police reports that the officer lied about the ID, putting the person at the robbery. And they said, you know, I came face to face with him. I pulled up. We started looking through the files. You can tell, I mean, it's a long story, but my listeners know it, but he's completely lying, completely made up the whole thing. But then 24 years later, 23 years later, we talked to Jody, who's one they're talking about. And they're like, I mean, yeah, I was there, but that didn't, like, he was lying for them. What a crazy situation to be in trial. Right. So they're saying you did this robbery and we know this because of XYZ reason. They know XYZ reason are complete bullshit. They're lies, but they can't say that the reason they know is because they were there and they were actually the other guy. You know,
This is the same situation
where they like kind of cut corners because the ends justify the means kind of thing.
Yeah. And I think, you know, in this particular case, I think at the time, David Tamahidi, he was lying to the police about what he had done. He knew they were full of shit because they were making up stuff about what he'd done, but both sides were, you know, they were all telling their own bullshit stories. And I think that's what was happening. But the problem you have is sort of 35 years later, because no one's really tested this evidence, it becomes hard to really sort of say, okay, what is genuine in this case and what could be bullshit that was just made up? People have died now or too old to really be able to understand. And John Hughes is dead now. And so it becomes really difficult to go back through and actually look at pieces of evidence and say, can we trust this? Can we trust this person?
Right.
Can we trust this piece of evidence? And if you can't, you kind of have to just wipe that stuff. You can't rely on any of it. Then, you know, it just makes it very, very difficult. Yeah. Maybe the truth will come out of exactly what happened one day, but yeah, probably not anytime soon. But the focus, though, is the human remains. And it's almost a parallel story to what you've got, what sort of happened in terms of the murders, but then there's these remains. And I know where these are, and well, we know where they are. And so that's a separate thing to try and retrieve these. And who's guilty and innocent is almost not even relevant to me at the moment. It's just getting those remains back.
Right. Are you in contact with Heidi's family? Is that very important to them?
Well, so early on when I first started, I made contact with one of the family. I just said, hey, look, I'm planning on doing this podcast and this investigation, and do you want to be involved or sort of thing? And they just said, you know, they don't want to be involved at this point, but they're going to follow along and hope for the best sort of thing. So occasionally we've been in touch. But in general, the way I saw it is I didn't want to use sort of interviews with them as content and stuff like that. I just, I'll leave them be unless I find something that's really probative and it's like, okay, like now I have something I need to talk to you about. And, you know, we're sort of at that point now. I didn't want to get hopes up or anything until we get to a point where it's time to actually get your hopes up.
Well, and it has to be at least some, I would think, level of closure for them to finally, I mean, obviously they know that she's been killed, but without ever finding the body. What's interesting, and I know you probably got to tiptoe around what this is, but how long ago did you find out where these remains were?
Over a year now.
And you said you still haven't gone to retrieve them?
Not necessarily. Things have happened, but yeah, I just, it's not been nothing that's happened, but yeah, I can't quite speak of it yet because there's still more unfolding. But yeah, this year, like something did happen involving the police and these remains, and more is still happening, obviously. I can't quite say yet, but
I was walking you into something that you couldn't talk about. My brain is just white, like, are they somewhere where they can't get to them? Like, what are they?
So the thing is, I mean, like, most property is private in New Zealand, you know, so you can't just like wander up and dig to look. So it requires complicated search warrants, and evidence needs to be, and you need to go through the High Court to get search warrants and things like this. So it's quite detailed. Things have to be done right. Yeah. So,
and I don't know how much of this you've shared and are allowed to, because you said somebody came to you and said that they know where this person knew this body was there 30 some years ago and just left them there.
Yeah. Like the remains were discovered. The police weren't alerted. And, you know, those remains remain where they were, more or less, we believe. So, you know, and so basically I've gone along and found all these people, and then once, and then I've handed these people to the police, and then the police, they reinvestigate the same thing I've investigated effectively to check it's right. credible, and then they've followed up behind me, sort of thing. Yeah, and so that's still sort of ongoing, and it's been a difficult road. And I can't wait to share the whole story and hopefully a positive conclusion soon.
It's great work. It's just amazing this how doggedly you've been pursuing this.
You know, it's hard too, because, you know, then you have out there, you know, the trolls and people that think you're just pausing or you're like taking your time to try and like make money and stuff. And it's like, if you knew the fucking truth of what's going on, you know, so you have to deal with that criticism sometimes that, oh, you've just walked away from this case. And it's like, you have no idea, you know, but you have to zip it up.
Dude, all, my brother, somehow at some point we have to get on the same continent and go get a beer, because like, I know it's so hard. We sit here, I talked to Erica about it. And, you know, when Mike was my old producer was here, and we're just like, we got to wait. And then, yeah, everybody has their assumptions. And it was like, like you just said, if they had any fucking idea what you were actually doing right then.
I know, man. And it's just, yeah. And everyone feels like they're entitled to know what's happening. And it's like, mate, at the end of the day, it's always an investigation first. It's the podcast does come second. And you're so appreciative of all your listeners and supporters and people that help fund it. But some people don't understand, you know, most people are good, but some don't understand that things have to be done the right way. Otherwise, you know, you'll never get justice, and you won't get what you want, because there's a law, there's legal process, you know.
Well, and I would say that, you know, I'm never going to sacrifice justice being served in a case for a Webby.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? Like, I'm not going to be like, this is, it'll be a great podcast. And if, and so you've had the same experience with the law enforcement there that I get with a lot of attorneys. And, you know, I have attorneys and people that I work with on cases here that will be open with me and share stuff with me, because they find over the years have like built up that trust. Mm-hmm. We're like, we know that you're not going to take this and just go make a podcast about it. And I try to, you know, and I'm, it's probably similar to what you do. Like for me in our current case, and there's like, I found something, there's a person I need to go talk to, but there's another agency investigating it. So I call them and be like, hey, I want to go do this. Is that okay with you? And if they're like, oh no, let us do that. Well, then I'll just, even though it would make a great podcast, but I would rather have justice be served and then miss out on that episode sometimes.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. That happens all the time. You know, my first calls these days when I get to something that's super important is straight to a detective or that I'd be working with. And it's like, hey, this is important. This needs to be dealt with. And as you'll probably know, though, it's, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't always make it drink straight away.
Right.
You know, and then you're like, yeah, how long is this going to take? I'll sit and wait for 3 months, you know. But
and that's where the idea of you're being a content creator and then being a law enforcement agency working on a 35-year-old cold case doesn't jive exactly with your time. It's like, can we get this done so I can close out this season, please?
Oh, yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, right. And I need to get into the new season. Like,
yeah, right.
You know, and like it is now. I mean, like now I have to, I'm circling back to do this. And but it's sort of, I think that's kind of what makes podcasts like ours popular and people like it, is it's genuine, because it's not just a nice, tidy little bow, you know, like wrapped up at the end of a season and everything flows perfectly. You know, it's
messy.
It's messy, and that's real life. And they're really following along with a real investigation and what's unfolding. And it's incredibly frustrating for us sometimes, but it just is what it is. But like you said, there's not many people out there doing what we're doing, you know, like not just being storytellers, but actually investigators.
Right.
We are both. We have to be storytellers as well.
Well, that's a big part of it. I've said, I mean, I wasn't saying this 10 years ago. I say it now, that my least favorite part about it being an investigative podcaster is podcasting. And not that, like, this stuff. I love this. I love our follow-ups and all this, but like having like sitting down and like writing it into a narrative and then putting it, like, I always said, like, when I retire, what I want to do in my retirement is to get my actual PI license here and then go do the same work I'm doing now, but just do it for defense attorneys.
Yeah.
Without, you know, trolls yelling at me on the internet all the time while I'm doing it.
Yeah. I know exactly. Like, it's funny. I was doing another interview the other day and they were saying, you know, how do you deal with the negative criticism and stuff? And sadly, you realize that as you grow as a public figure and as your downloads get into the hundreds of thousands and millions, then you realize that there's a small percentage of the population that just, they're just vicious and, you know, they'll attack right. for anything, you know? And I guess like you learn to just sort of ignore the internet and not go into certain places of it. I don't know if you find the same thing.
Yeah. And that the hard part, like with mine is that it's crowdsourced, right? So I have to engage with the audience. And that's the thing. You put the nail on the head. And I think it's important for my audience to be reminded of that too, that like the audience is the most valuable part about this because they're here, not only giving their input, but they're also the ones that are generating the revenue, which what it allows us to do is to go do this I mean, just here in the state where I live, you know, private investigators will charge a defense attorney $500 to $1,000 an hour. And we do it for free. Like yeah. the people that are in prison get that work for free. And we're able to do that for free because of all these listeners that are funding it. But part of that is where I would like to say, I'm just going to shut it. I always like the podcasters and YouTubers and people that are, you know, that are just doing whatever they're doing, but it's not like a crowdsource thing. And they're like, I just never look at the comments. I'm like, I have to look at the comments. In those shitty comments, somewhere in there's an important one that I need to know that's going to help us move the case forward.
Sometimes, yeah, it can be like that, you know. But yeah, like I've sort of got to the point now with where I feel like if people that have something really important to say and it's genuinely relevant, they tend to either call me or come via email as opposed to just sort of a random comment on a page. But you do. Sometimes there has been times when someone, for whatever reason, has thought that the best way to get hold of me is by putting a comment on some random Facebook thread. But luckily, yeah. you know, you have people out there that will say, hey, have you talked to this person? But the other thing, too, is most of the time, even when the podcast is running live, the podcast runs at least 3 months behind where the actual investigation is a lot of the time. So most... Uh-huh. Most things that come in tend to be dated by the time it comes in. It's like, yeah, we've already been down that path, investigated that, cleared right. that. I find normally in the cases, there's the core people that are sort of key. But, you know, like, that's the thing I always say too. It's like the people that listen make it happen, and particularly subscribers, as you'll probably know, like it gets to a point where they're just so key to keeping things going. And my recent right. case I did was my first international case. So in Australia, in Melbourne, and I flew over there 4 times and spent, I don't know how many months over there working, and it's hotels and flights and rental cars. And, you know, it adds up to a lot of money. And like you said, I mean, I've never charged a family a single dollar, and I never will. And, you know, so that's an amazing thing. Like you said, private investigators cost hundreds of thousands of dollars for a case. So
it just started, I lost my train of thought when you mentioned Australia, because you that was your season 4 case.
Yeah.
In that one, now, have you fully wrapped season 4? Or are you still working on that one? Because I know you kind of hit pause on season 3,
yeah.
did season 4, and now you've circled back to kind of part 2 of season 3.
Yeah. So I sort of see something maybe similar will happen with season 4. So eventually I took it to the point where I had a very good lead for the most important lead in this case, in Alana's case. So just so your listeners know, I mean, it was a very difficult case involving a 16-year-old girl who was found dumped at a vacant property with a heroin overdose. But it was a suspicious overdose from the start. And eventually, 2 DNA profiles of 2 different males were found sort of on and inside her, if you read between the lines there. And these men were never really questioned, never really asked how it got there. Unfortunately, it was treated by the police at the time as just another heroin overdose in Melbourne in the 90s. But, you know, so I followed a lead through to the point where it's like, okay, you know, I know who put her there. No one ever knew that before. And again, I'm working with a couple detectives in Australia who've helped to advance this. And now the new evidence from the podcast is being basically presented by the police back to the coroner to look at whether the case is going to be reopened. And again, most of that new evidence is stuff that, not most, but some of it, I didn't release in the podcast, but I'll circle back there if it comes to it.
And that's that messy bit. Where, yeah. because yeah. there's these like technical issues too. Mm-hmm. Like I'm running into that right now. This episode, I'm in the middle of season 15 covering this case, and we're in a break right now. I'm doing a couple things. I'm doing this. So that it's little things like, so is this still season 15, or do I make this season 16, or where do I don't know where this lives.
Yeah, you know? I know. It is the little things like that. You're trying to figure it out. And, You don't want it
but
to
be. But that's the work. That's when you're just, you know, you're just, when your focus is on doing the work, then this goes, you know, all these things take a back seat. And I'm sure you have this the same as I do. You just have a very gracious and forgiving audience. It's like, whatever you got to do, let's just keep moving the ball forward. Because yeah. Sometimes it's a jumbled up mess.
And you know, I'm always reminded by, you know, my listeners who will send through, you know, if I, like, actually, I've paused just at the moment with season three, like the new season three stuff. I said,
yeah,
the most recent episode, I've just said, look, I need to pause for a couple of weeks because there's some ongoing developments. And instead of getting messages of anger, it's like, hey, take your time, you know, like, yeah, don't worry, like, we're in this with you sort of thing. And, you know, sometimes I think, like, I should have a wall of just the positive comments people send me, because I tell you, there's 99% of them are amazing comments. And I think, like, there's a lot of cool people out there that are in it for the right reasons. And you'll probably know. Yeah. Yeah. What was the question?
There wasn't one. I was just yapping. And you know what? That's a good spot to transition to, because before we wrap this thing up, because, you know, I think a big part of it is, and the reason I like doing these conversations, why I like doing when we did True Crime Binge, and it's kind of what I'm looking at, season 16 is kind of going to be back to the True Crime Binge type of thing.
Okay.
You know, over the next couple of months while we're prepping for a new case. But what I like about it is you get to know the person behind, that there's real human beings with real struggles. And what I remember when we recorded the last True Crime Binge, if I remember correctly, your wife was pregnant.
Yeah. Yes.
At the time.
Yes.
So how did that go?
That went well. And I'm a proud father now and I love it. So he's 19 months old and we just had another one 5 weeks ago. So,
oh, wow.
So we've got a little girl now and a 19-month-old boy.
That's fantastic. So, but you're not sleeping at all now.
Yeah. I'll say that, you know, my wife does most of the heavy lifting with that. But yeah, it makes things difficult. You know, you'll be in your office. I have a home office. And the other day I was in here and I was trying to do some work. And then I could hear screaming from sort of stereo sound, like over there and, there, and over there and then over there. And I went out. I was like, are you okay? No, I'm not okay. You know, like, one screaming is okay, but when you've got two.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And trying to juggle them both. Oh, and you're coming into, I hate to tell you this, brother, but my brother had my nephew over here for Thanksgiving last week, and he just turned two. And boy, it's a good thing they're adorable at that age. Is that little fucker never stop you? Once they learn to run, then that's all they want to do, just run and grab things and just chasing them in circles all over the place. It's going to be fun for you.
I know. At the moment, River is my boy, and he just, he loves golf, and he's just got his little golf club. He just wants to go play golf in the backyard all the time. But, you know, he's only so small, and you're like, oh, you kind of have to supervise him, but he'll just bang on the door. He's like, golf ball, golf ball, golf ball.
Yeah, they never get tired.
Oh,
they never get tired.
He goes to daycare, you know, and they run around all day, and then I'll pick him up at 3, and I think, oh, he'll probably get home and want to relax. No, golf ball, you know. Golf ball. I'm like, well, I'm glad you picked a sport that they make a bit of money. Maybe you can look after Dad in my retirement.
Right. Yeah. Well, in New Zealand, he could be a professional golfer, podcaster, an actor, a lawyer. All at the same time.
Yeah, well, I mean, of course, that's what we do.
Right.
Yeah.
So are you guys done? Is two kids what you want, or are we thinking there's going to be more little wolves coming?
You know, I said, I was like, you know, like, I'd keep having them. I love it. I was like, we'd need to get a nanny at some point. But I was like, you know, hey, it's up to you. It's your body, you know. And Ash said, you know, I thought she'd say, no, we're done. Boy and a girl, but she said, oh, you know, maybe another one. So I don't know. Women have this amnesia with birth where it's horrendous when they go through it. You know, it's certainly like Ash's one was. I'm never doing this again. But within a week or two, there's a hormone in their brain, I think, that tells them that, you know, so they forget the pain and they only remember the good side of it. So yeah, I think that hormone might be kicking in. So who knows?
I have to know your daughter's name, because I got to tell you, River Wolf, it might be the coolest name I've ever heard.
Yeah, it's a good one. So Ashley chose her name, Dylan.
Okay.
So I wasn't so sure about it at the beginning, but it's sort of growing on me, like, you know, sort of like a boy's name for a girl. So yeah, Dylan, I think it'll be cool in the end.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to let you get to that family and get to your work, but I appreciate you coming on. It's always good catching up with you. And for my listeners, if you guys are looking for something to check out, Guilt is an amazing podcast. There's a ton of content there to go. Please go support Ryan, support his work. He's doing great things down in New Zealand, and give him a listen. Yeah. Ryan, thanks so much, buddy, for joining me.
Thanks very much, Bob. Yeah, really appreciate it, as always.
Truth and Justice is an NBI Studios production, co-written and produced by Erica Bergenham. Music for Season 15 is created and composed by Caden Ladislaw. Follow-up episodes are co-hosted by Janet Varney and Zach Weaver. Our logo font was created by Tate Krupa of Red Swan Graphic Design. Our website is created, managed, and maintained by Katie Ross of createdintandem.com. Thank you to our volunteer transcription team, Erica Cantor, Kathy McElhaney, Courtney Wimberly, Kaywood Yomnick, Danielle Rohr, Jennifer Athey, and Caroline Dwyer. Truth and Justice provides all investigative and advocacy work for the wrongfully convicted completely free of charge. We're able to do that in large part thanks to you, our listeners, through your generous pledges on Patreon. Patreon accounts for the overwhelming majority of our funding. The number one way you can support our work is to become a patron at patreon.com/truthandjustice. For just $5 a month, you'll get all episodes ad-free, a bonus pregame episode every Wednesday, and also a video version of the Friday follow-ups exclusive to our patrons. Patrons also get to participate and join the chat live in many of our interviews and get early access to much of our content. Just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice to sign up. You can also help us out by going to iTunes and leaving us a 5-star rating and review. It doesn't cost you a penny and goes a long way towards making the show more visible. If you have a new case that you'd like us to consider, you can submit your cases on our website, truthandjusticepod.com. Just click on the case submission button and fill out the form. You can always keep in touch with us through our email at theories@truthandjusticepod.com. You can like our Facebook page or join in on the conversation on the official Truth and Justice Podcast fans page. You can also connect with us on social media platform X @truthjusticepod. And to follow our personal accounts on social media, I can be found at Bob Ruff Truth. Janet can be found at Janet Varney, and Zach is at Z to the Q. However you do it, stay engaged and stay in touch. But as for now, we're signing off. I'm Bob Ruff.
I'm Zach Weaver.
And I'm Janet Varney.
And this has been Truth and Justice.
Buying a car in Carvana was so easy. I was able to finance it through them.
Whoa, wait, you mean finance?
Yeah, finance. Got pre-qualified for a Carvana auto loan, entered my terms, and shopped from thousands of great car options all within my budget.
That's cool that financing through Carvana was so easy.
Financed. Done. And I get to pick up my car from their Carvana vending machine tomorrow.
Financed.
Right, that's what I said.
You can spend time trying to pronounce financing, or you can actually finance and buy your car today on
Carvana.
Financing subject to credit approval. Additional terms and conditions may apply.